All right, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you for coming. How many people were in my talk yesterday? Okay, great. Thanks for coming back. That's always a good sign. Must be doing something, right? So I am really, really excited to give this presentation, or at Microsoft we say we're super excited about something. This is actually the first time I've presented this presentation ever, and I was doing two things that you're not supposed to do before a presentation. Last night I got really excited about, you know, changing up some of my demos and adding some new things, and before I knew it, I got an hour and a half of sleep last night. So that's two things that you're not supposed to do, which is add a bunch of stuff for the night before and then go into a presentation with an hour and a half of sleep. But I hope that the investments I made last night will pay off. This is a topic that I'm very, very passionate about. I hope you'll also bear with me here. For folks that were in the room yesterday, I mentioned that we're getting very, very close to having the Visual Studio 11 beta available. That's going to be a public download that you'll all be able to play with. Unfortunately, I don't have permission to demonstrate the beta, and so what I have here is kind of a combination of 2010, the developer preview. I do have a VM that's running some beta components or something in between developer preview and beta, so I have about four different VMs going, and if everything goes well, then that'll be great, and if not, we'll have fun with that too. It is a testing talk after all. We expect to find some bugs once in a while. But I'd love your feedback. My email address actually is brian.keller@microsoft.com. So if you have any ideas for how to make this session better for future audiences, that's what I would love to hear. So for folks that I haven't presented to before, I've been at Microsoft for about 10 years. I've worked on Visual Studio almost that entire time, and I am on Channel 9 as well. On my blog, you'll find all of my presentations. I try to make sure that I have at least one version of each presentation available on my blog. So you'll see links to other talks that I've done on software testing around 2010, talks that I've done on kind of the end-to-end changes that we have coming in Visual Studio 11, a talk very similar to what I gave yesterday. I also package up all of my virtual machines, my hands-on labs. In fact, the Visual Studio 11 developer preview has a virtual machine that I've put together that takes you through about six hands-on labs and demo scripts, including some of what you'll see today around exploratory testing. And then the lab management team built another blog post that tells you how to add lab management capabilities on top of that VM. So all the links are in the slides. You'll have access to those if you want to go back and download the developer preview and then add lab management capabilities to it and start playing with that. I would encourage you to check it out. And I'm also working on updating all this content for the beta. So shortly after the beta ships, which will be soon, then you'll be able to download the beta version of the virtual machine and all the related content. So, and I'm also working on a couple of new books. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to tell you that, but working on a couple of updates to the books. All right, that's out of the way. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, there's two major categories. One is manual testing. How many people are using the manual testing tools that we shipped in 2010? Quick show of hands. Okay, a few of you. For those of you that aren't, I am going to cover a little bit of that just to make sure that everyone's familiar with what we have in 2010. So apologies to the folks that are already using it, but I think we'll get through that quickly so that we can get onto the new stuff that's in Visual Studio 11 and Microsoft Test Manager 11. Once we cover that, I'm going to show you how easy it is to set up a lab management environment with Visual Studio 11 and Team Foundation Server 11. How many people are using lab management? Probably not many. Okay, that's kind of what I thought. Lab management in 2010 is one of these things that you kind of have to be a rocket scientist to figure out. It's super, super cool technology, but as you'll see, it requires, you know, in 2010, it requires Hyper-V on Windows Server with SCVMM and a lot of different work required to get it all set up. And once you do, then you can really have some great productivity gains, and you can completely automate your build, deploy, test workflow and snapshot your VMs and all that good stuff, but we really wanted to make sure that lab management was more approachable for kind of the average human beings like you and me. And so what we've done is we've still continued to support that whole stack with SCVMM. We're going to support SCVMM 2012. We've got a lot of improvements for folks that raised their hands about using lab management already. But for those of you that may have looked at it and said, oh my gosh, this is, you know, terribly complicated and it's going to take me 3 weekends to set it up, I'm going to show you how you can set it up in just a matter of minutes using the new version of lab management. And then I'll, if I have some time, I'll talk a little bit about how you can track quality across your entire life cycle. So for those of you that have seen me talk before, I always like to kind of remind ourselves of why we care about quality. These are some famous examples. So this is the very first U.S. Navy smart ship. They called it a smart ship. Of course, whenever you do that, you're putting a big target on the back of your shirt there, because, of course, as soon as they got it out in the air, in the water, and a crew member typed a zero into one of the text boxes, this is like 1994, they actually had a divide by zero that shut down the entire ship. So I don't want to be the crewman that typed in the zero. I really don't want to be the tester that forgot to test for that condition. This is the European Space Program, the Ariane 5. You're probably familiar with this one. They basically reused a lot of the code from the Ariane 4, but the Ariane 5 took a different flight path, and it basically caused a divide overflow that blew up the rocket. Nobody was hurt or anything, but it did cost about $370 million U.S. dollars in 1996 prices, so that's probably more than $500 million today. And then the F-22 Raptor, which is one of the U.S. jets, they forgot to actually check to make sure what would happen when you actually fly west past the international date line. And it shut down all the computers. Thankfully, it was a clear day, so the pilot was able to fly back safely. But I think these are interesting examples. If you like this kind of stuff, I love this talk that was given a few years ago at, I think it was at OSCON, called An Illustrated History of Failure. And the guy goes through and he talks about how it's possible now, due to the magic of software, to write a couple of lines of code that completely eradicate the entire value that you as an individual will contribute to your country's GDP and that of 2,000 other people or so. So it's amazing once you think about software gone wrong. Obviously, software gone right can be very, very good, but I try to make sure that nobody in my presentations is ever in a future example like this. Now, of course, I do work for the largest software company on the planet, so if I'm going to throw stones, we'll look at some Microsoft examples as well. I'm not quite sure how to close that. That's from Visual C# 2005 Express, a product I worked on, so that's kind of embarrassing. Here's another one. This file is still copying. An error has occurred while displaying the error that has occurred while creating an error report. Anybody see what's wrong with that? They're missing a period at the end. And then, okay, what else are you going to do about it? Just okay, all right. So obviously we're all in this together. We have a vested interest in quality. I'm sure you could all sit around here and share your own embarrassing examples of bugs that you've found and fixed over time. What are we going to do about that? Well, the first thing that we want to do is we really want to drive quality up front. So I do a lot of rock climbing, and I'm out of shape right now, but I'm trying to get back into the gym. And the cost of failure when you're in the gym is very, very low. So maybe I jam my finger and I'm out of the gym for a couple of days. But by the time you actually get out onto the mountain, you want to make sure that you've really tested yourself and you trained yourself so that when you're on top of a glacier like I am here, and I don't know if you can see that, but in the background it's all clouds that are coming in. That was about a 60 mile an hour hailstorm that hit us. That's when you really want to make sure that you tested yourself, your gear, your friends, your emergency plans, all that kind of stuff. Well, software is the same way. We've all seen the numbers, right? If you can catch a bug when you're developing it and you just wrote that code, it maybe takes you 5 or 10 minutes to fix that. Very, very low cost to you and your company. But if you wait until the bug's already gone out to your customers before it's uncovered, then the cost can be 10, 100, sometimes even 1,000 times more expensive based on some of the data that I've seen. So we really want to drive that quality upstream, right as close as possible to where the code's getting written and those requirements are getting defined. So that's the tenet number one that we had when we started getting into this business of not just writing code and running code and that sort of thing, but really embracing the whole quality end-to-end as part of the Visual Studio 11 family, or Visual Studio 2010 family, because what I'm talking about here is actually the entry into the 2010 vision. And so we looked at the entire market. We said, okay, there's a bunch of testing that takes place, right? At the far left end of the spectrum, left? Yeah, far left end of the spectrum, you have manual testing, people that wake up every day and they have a set of scripts and they look at the latest build and they try to figure out which test they're going to run, and they run those tests manually and they surface a lot of bugs, right? And then at the far right end of the spectrum, we have coded UI tests, unit tests. We have umpteen different unit testing frameworks out there. And as it turns out, despite all the advances that we've made in test automation over the years, the majority of testing takes place on the left end of the spectrum. So, you know, this may vary by organization, but we see by and large across the industry about 70% of the testing that takes place is manual testing. And there's a reason for that, right? I mean, you can write great automated tests, but at the end of the day, sometimes it just takes a human being sitting in front of a screen to say, yep, you know, that doesn't look right. Sometimes you can write automated tests and they need to be rewritten constantly because your UI or the rest of your application is changing. And so I think we're always going to have the lion's share of the testing efforts being based around manual testing. And unfortunately, the lion's share of what the industry and the open source community has come out with over the last several years has really been focused on kind of the right end of the spectrum. And so Microsoft's trying to fill that gap by delivering great tools for the manual tester. Now, I know what you're thinking. I'm not even going to ask, but I'm sure that most of the people in this room are probably not manual testers. You're programmers. You're saying, why do I care about a manual testing talk? I'm going to go to another talk. But the reality is that when your testers are out there testing your code and they find a bug, what's the first thing you say? You say, works on my machine, right? Happens all the time. I've been there, right? I've been there on both sides of the equation where I know that I found a bug and the developer is telling me that, you know, it works on his machine, so it must not be a problem, right? And I've been there when someone comes to me with bugs in my code. And, you know, of course, I don't write bugs in my code, so I'm not sure where this came from. But what are we going to do to fix it? And so that's in the 2010 product why we introduced this whole capability around manual testing. So we have a tool that's called Microsoft Test Manager. It's this isn't a marketing presentation, but just to set some context, it's included as part of the test professional SKU and part of the ultimate SKU as well. And then we also have this lab management capability that allows you to automate build deploy test workflows. And so the three reasons we did this is, number one, we feel like testing needs to be right there alongside the development practice to really drive that quality upstream. Number two, we wanted to give manual testers a great set of tools that they can use to be productive as manual testers. And number three, we really want to bring testers together with developers so that we can capture actionable information whenever there's a bug, so that the developer isn't sitting there saying, hey, it works on my machine, or hey, I need you to give me these, you know, 10 or 15 pages worth of information before I'll actually accept this bug, right? That's not a good thing, because that the next time the tester finds a bug, you know, they say, well, do I really want to fill out those 15 pages of information, or is this bug kind of okay? That's not the behavior we want to encourage. We want to make sure that those bugs are automatically captured with all the information a developer needs to fix the problem. Okay? So that's kind of my spiel on how we got there to 2010. Now let me drop into some demonstrations, and I'll contrast the difference between formal test case management and exploratory testing, or sometimes called agile testing, sometimes called ad hoc testing. There's lots of different organizations that have different preferences. Some are 100% formal test case management, some are 100% ad hoc testing, and we feel like we have a great tool now that can actually address both types of testing and give you the best of both worlds. So let me stop showing you slides and actually take you right into some demonstration here. So to start with, this is just my 2010 virtual machine. The formal test case management, by and large, has not changed since 2010. So I'm just going to quickly take you through the 2010 demonstration, just because this is where all of my sample data and my sample tests is, and so I didn't have time to move everything over. But this is our website that we're testing. So it, you know, it's a basic e-commerce website. We sell paper airplanes and model airplanes. And this is Microsoft Test Manager. So if you haven't seen this before, Microsoft Test Manager was built from the ground up as a tool specifically for manual testers. It connects to Team Foundation Server on the back end, and this is responsible for doing things like test case management, test planning, the ability for you to go in here and write test cases and then track those against your individual requirements or user stories, and then ultimately to run those tests and be able to capture actionable data for the development team once you find bugs. Okay, so what we have on the left-hand side, this is a list of all the user stories. If you're not practicing Scrum, that's fine. It could be requirements that your team is implementing on the development side within this particular iteration. So, for example, you know, as a customer, I should be able to remove items from my shopping cart. Now, in order to make sure that that functionality is working, my test team has come in here and written a number of test cases. So, for example, I have a test case over here that says customers can remove items from the shopping cart by clicking on the X icon. And if I open that up, then you'll see the list of all the individual test steps. I think I double-clicked. It's still waking up. Hello. I've got like five virtual machines on this laptop, so bear with me. There it is. Okay. Now it's awake. And so in this particular test case, it's a manual test case, so we have a list of individual test steps that the tester is going to execute as they go through to validate this functionality. And so I can write any number of test cases. Some of them can say that, you know, as a user, I should be able to do this. Users should not be able to do that. All your basic, you know, formal test case management that you can read about in any formal testing approach book. And then if I come over to the test tab, you can see a list of all the test cases that I as a tester care about when I'm going through and running my test plan. And so here you can see that same test case. I'm actually executing it across a couple of different test configurations. So this is my test matrices. So I need to make sure that it's running on Windows Server 2008 and Windows 7 with IE8. And if I take this test and say run, it's going to open this up into Microsoft Test Runner. And Microsoft Test Runner is then responsible for telling the tester exactly what they need to do in order to validate this test case. Another nice thing about this is that after they do it the first time, they can actually record their actions. And as long as the UI hasn't changed substantially since the last time they ran it, they can just fast forward through this test case. So I've already recorded this once, and I can just come in here and select some of these steps and say play. And now it's going to play back my actions, quickly step through the application, and then turn it back over to me as a tester to say, does everything look right? Maybe there's some new functionality I need to test at this point. Once I'm happy with this, I can go ahead and say, yep, you know, that passed. And then just for grins, I can go ahead and play that last step to close the browser. And then I'm off to the next test case. Okay? So that's formal test case management, starting with your requirements, going all the way through your test cases. You can update that from build to build. And the other really cool thing about this is that as a manual tester, one of the challenges that we always have to try to address is, hey, I just ran through, you know, 100 test cases in the last week, and now the development team is telling me that I have a brand new build that I need to test. Well, you know, I only have so much time between now and the end of the day. Where do I focus my energy in terms of trying to figure out which test cases have changed or maybe impacted by the latest changes that the team checked in? Okay? And so we have a feature that runs in the background called Test Impact Analysis that can help you answer that question. So, for example, if I come back over to Track and I go to Assign Build helps me answer a few questions. Number one, is this build even worth me picking up and moving over to? And so here at the top, you can see the current build that my team is testing against. And then you can see one of the newer builds that's available out of my build server. And down here at the bottom, we're actually taking all that work item data straight from Team Foundation server, and we're telling the tester which work items have been committed in this particular build. And so as a tester, I can look at this and I can say, okay, I see that, you know, somebody checked in some code related to some regular expressions. Well, that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm not sure what regular expressions he was working on. So that's maybe not an interesting build. But then when I take a look at the next build, you can see here, all right, now this is starting to get a little bit more interesting. I can see that this particular user story was resolved, and I could open up that user story and understand it and say, okay, maybe that's a piece of functionality I was waiting to test. So this build's interesting. But then if I look at the very latest, you can see that there's even a bug fix here too. And so I need to validate that bug fix and make sure that it actually was properly fixed by the developer. So I'll say, go ahead and assign that to my plan. And then the next thing that it tells me is, okay, there's a lot of tests that you ran yesterday or previously that may have passed. And in the background, we're using that test impact analysis at the code level to say, based on the change the developer made to this class or this method within this class file, and the last time you ran that test and it passed, it actually called some of that code. We can now tell you that you may need to, you know, think about retesting that code. It doesn't mean it's going to fail, and it doesn't mean that there may not be other things within your test plan that also need you to be rerun, but it just means if I have, you know, 20 minutes before my lunch break, what are the top five tests out of my test plan that I can spend my effort on so I can quickly get that feedback over to the development team, okay? And so I'll go ahead and say view recommended tests, and then this is going to tell me that there's a couple of tests I want to consider rerunning, and we'll reset those to active, okay? So that's Microsoft Test Manager 2010. Apologies to those of you that use it day in, day out. I just wanted to make sure everyone is aware of the approaches that we enable there. Let's switch over to my Visual Studio 11 virtual machine, and I'll show you what we've done to introduce exploratory testing. So with exploratory testing, the idea is that you're not necessarily starting with a list of requirements and going through very scientifically and saying, you know, it needs to do this and it can't do that. That's certainly a great approach, and I recommend that everyone do that to some degree. But sometimes there's bugs that you can find just by putting your tester hat on and saying, I'm going to go break something, right? We've all been there, right? You find a text box on a website and you see how much data you can put into there and hit submit and see if you can cause the server to crash. Or James Whitaker is a tester at Google now, and he wrote a book about exploratory testing. He actually helped invent this product back when he was at Microsoft, and he's got some really great examples in there from Google. The Google Maps team, for example, they showed that if you're standing, I can't remember where it's at, I think it's somewhere in England, but if you're standing next to a particular footbridge and you say, give me walking directions to something that's just on the other side of that footbridge, unfortunately, their maps weren't aware of the fact that there was a footbridge there, and so they told you to actually walk all the way around this entire lake, and it was like a 9-mile trek or something like that, where you could have just gone across the footbridge. Well, how many times are we going to think to write a formal test case for that type of scenario? And I know you're all saying, oh, I would have thought about it. Well, you know, I'm not sure I would have. And so sometimes you need this mixture of formal versus exploratory testing. And the other approach that I've seen here is, you know, let's just make sure that we have privacy policies at the bottom of every website. That's another type of exploratory test where you don't want to necessarily script, okay, click this page, then click that page, then click that page. But if you tell the tester, hey, just go look for privacy policy links that are missing from pages, they'll maybe spend 20 minutes of it and come back and say whether or not the site looks good. Okay? So in order to do exploratory testing within Visual Studio 11 or Microsoft Test Manager 11, you just go over to the Test tab and you say, do exploratory testing. I know, big surprise there. And so I have a couple of options. One is I can say explore, and that just says I'm going to start testing the application. I'm not necessarily bounded. I may have an idea in mind for what I want to test. Or the other approach is to say, you know, this particular user story, something about signing up for emails, I'm just going to go play around in there for a while. Now, what you pick is up to you. It doesn't really matter. The only thing that is nice about picking a particular user story is that if you start finding bugs and test cases, those in Team Foundation Server will then be linked back to that particular user story or requirement. And so then you can report against that later on. Of course, there's nothing stopping you from finding a bug and manually linking it after the case, but sometimes it's nice just to be able to make that correlation in the beginning so that you don't forget. Well, I'm just going to go exploring, kind of go off the beaten path, and I'll say explore. And now what this does is it opens up Microsoft Test Manager or Microsoft Test Runner, but it doesn't give me any steps because, of course, it's now up to me as a tester to apply what I know about trying to break software. But what it does do for me is it starts capturing actionable data in the background. You know, one of the criticisms of ad hoc or exploratory testing is management says, well, how are we going to know exactly what you tested and didn't test? Or, you know, oftentimes we get bugs that come from exploratory testing sessions, and the tester doesn't necessarily remember exactly what they did leading up to that bug. And I think it's a fair criticism. But with Microsoft Test Runner, we can capture all that information in the background. And so here you can see down at the bottom, I'm not going to turn on audio because I'm in the middle of a virtual machine, but I could turn on audio, I could turn on video, I could turn on IntelliTrace collection, event logs. If I was using a test environment that included multiple machines within that test environment, a web server, a database server, a web client down here, I could say what I wanted to collect off of each one of those machines independently. Maybe an IntelliTrace file off of my ASP.NET server, an event log off of SQL Server, and a video recording off the web client. And so as I'm starting to do those exploratory testing sessions, we're capturing all that information in the background. So let me just start testing here. And from this point forward, anything that I do is going to be captured. Of course, you always have this pause button. So when your boss walks into your office and you know you start having a conversation, you can mute that audio recording. It's always nice to do. And so here, I'm just going to start using my website like I think a user might, right? So I might click on a particular record in here and maybe scroll down. And, you know, that looks pretty good. I like that. Let me go back to the dashboard, and I'll click on another record. And, you know, you might be in here for a while. I might be doing, you know, a testing session that maybe lasts a couple of hours before I find a particular bug. And then eventually, I do find a bug, and I go to the edit page here. Actually, that's not what I was looking for. This is real agile exploratory testing here. Go to delete, I think. Yes, that's the one I was looking for. So here you can see that that I actually don't have the assignments that I had in the previous page. So customer doesn't have a value, created by doesn't have a value. Well, I know those values exist. It's just something having to do with this delete page. So I can just go over here to my log, and I can say, you know, delete page doesn't have correct values. I'm not spelling very well today. And then we can capture a screenshot. And now that's included. And at this point, I want to file a bug. This is something that should be fixed. So what I can do is I can say create a bug. And keep in mind, you know, I could have been testing for the last 45 minutes. So you'll see here that we have a lot of different stuff that happened that was captured as a result of what I was doing. And I'll show you how you can clean that up. So delete page should have appropriate values. Brian should be able to spell appropriately. And then what we'll do is we'll change the steps. And what I can do is I can just scope this now. Oh, they changed this. I'm using a newer build where they actually changed this. So what I can do is I can scope this just by grabbing the relevant details here about what I just did. And so, you know, maybe the last three steps that I did, grabbing the dashboard and then clicking that particular record and then clicking that delete link, maybe that's all that matters. And so what I can do is I can select that, and now it's scoped all of my actions down. It's also scoped my video recording, my audio annotations, any of that other information I was collecting in the background is now scoped down to just what matters. And so I can go ahead and save this and then move on and find another bug, but I want to make sure that this doesn't get reproduced later on. And so the way I can do that is to create a test case as well. And so I'm filing a bug, the development team's going to fix it, but now I really want to make sure that I take the best of both worlds here, which is I just found a bug using exploratory testing. I need to make sure this now gets captured as part of my formal test plan moving forward. And so once again, we give you that same ability to capture the information I just pulled in. So those are the three steps. You know, make sure delete page has correct values. And then if I come down here, those of you that are using Microsoft Test Manager today will appreciate the fact that we get rich text editing down here. It's funny, the little things. That was like our number one request. And then we can do something like, you know, make sure values are correct, but do not confirm deletion. And we can make that red or something. Okay. And so now I can go ahead and save and close. and now I'm back to my exploratory testing session. So I can keep going, I can find new bugs, I can create new test cases. Then once I'm done, I can close out of here, I can say in testing. Now that's the test results, so that's everything that I just tested. So if management wants to come back and audit later on and determine exactly what we tested and didn't test, this is a nice way to capture that and expose that to the management. And then what you'll notice here is that that test case now shows up as part of my test plan. Okay? So that's just a quick demonstration showing how formal test case management and agile exploratory testing can all play together and everyone's happy. All right. Now give me just a minute. I've got a couple of virtual machines I need to warm up here. Okay, well, that's hydrating everything. Let me talk about a couple of things in manual testing that I didn't show you in the demonstration, but they're important nonetheless. These are improvements that we've made. Of course, exploratory testing, rich text test steps, say that 10 times fast. We also have code coverage now for a manual test, so that allows you to say, out of my .NET applications, how much of the code was actually exercised as part of my manual test plan. So we've had that for years in the automated testing world for unit tests and load tests and web performance tests, but now we're bringing that over to manual tests as well. So that's just a really nice metric that you can watch to say, is my manual testing plan actually covering all of the code base, or do I need to go out and write some more tests to make sure that we're exercising everything. HTML5 automation. So, you know, you can write a manual test to do anything. I like to say you could write a manual test to test a bicycle tire if you want to. But when it comes to being able to capture your action recordings and then play those back, like I did in the first example where you're fast forwarding, in that case, it does depend on the type of application that you're using. Web applications, we've always supported very well. And obviously, HTML5 brings a lot of new capabilities. And we're doing our best to keep up with all the innovations that are happening there. It's not 100% of what's available in HTML5, like some of the Canvas stuff. That gets really tricky for us to do test automation with. But I think you'll find that the manual testing support and the test automation support for HTML5 is actually quite good in this release. So I hope you'll check that out. We also have Metro-style application testing for Windows 8. And so you could have, for example, a tablet that is then connected on the same network as your manual testing workstation. And with a Metro-style application, you don't want to have the test runner kind of docked over in the side. That wouldn't really be a nice experience. So what we allow you to do is say, let me run this Metro-style application over on your tablet, and we actually have a remote agent that gets installed over there and then sends back all that rich information. So you can have a desktop over here that tells you your test steps, and then you can be playing with the Metro style application over here, and we'll capture that information in the background and allow you to file bugs just like you would with a traditional desktop or web application. And then better lab management administration. Even though lab management is primarily used for test automation, I think this is a really killer feature for manual testers as well, as you'll see in the next demonstration here. Because, you know, oftentimes you are running on maybe a Windows 7 or a Windows 8 client box, and that's where you're doing your development. But you also need to make sure that the code that you're writing is going to work well on a Windows Server box or maybe a legacy Windows box, like a Windows Server 2003 or Windows Vista or something like that. And you don't necessarily want to have, you know, to be booting into different operating systems during the day to test that. But with lab management, what I'll show you here in a minute is that it's really easy now for you to point at any other box, whether that's a virtual machine or a physical box, and say, make that a place that I can deploy my code and run tests. So we'll get into that. Let me just make sure that my virtual machines are on a good track to success. And they are. That's great. And so if you've seen me give lab management talks before, you may have seen me show this slide. This is actually a deep Zoom presentation. So we can zoom in here. Let me talk a little bit about what lab management is in 2010. So in 2010, I mentioned how we're built on top of System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and we use Hyper-V under the covers, and you can automate build, deploy, test workflows. The way you first set that up within System Center Virtual Machine is you create what are called templates over here, and each one of your templates you end up installing three different agents onto. And once you've installed those, you can then generalize those into what are called environments. And so you can say at any time, I need an environment that consists of a Windows Server 2008 box and a Windows 7 client and, you know, some other virtual machine flavor that I'm going to use as a database server. And then System Center Virtual Machine kind of does the heavy lifting in the background, and you don't even have to worry about the physical machines. It says, okay, I've got a little bit of space and resources over here. Let me just pool these resources, and then a few minutes later, you've got your environment. And then the other cool thing that you can do at that point is you can then set up these build, deploy, test workflows. So, for example, you can say, let me get my code out of TFS, and let me go ahead and build that, so compile it into some set of binaries that I'm going to copy onto the web server and a SQL script that I'm going to deploy onto the database server. And so you copy that onto the environment. And then on each one of these machines, you can run those deployment scripts so that, you know, if it's an Xcopy deployment or a database import, you can do that. And then at that point, you can create an environment snapshot which says, okay, this is Friday night's build, deployed on all these machines, but before I've run any of my tests, because sometimes you run a test and that's somewhat destructive to the environment, and you want to be able to go back to that clean state. So you can then take a snapshot as part of this whole workflow automatically. And then at that point, you can start running your tests, whether those are automated tests or manual tests. And occasionally you find a bug and you say, okay, I want to file this to the tester, or to the developer rather. And so at that point, you can then take another snapshot. You can attach a link to that to the bug you're filing to the developer. And when the developer has time, they can then restore that snapshot and they can see the environment, which was in its exact state when that bug was discovered. So there's really no more like, hey, it works on my machine. You're really saying, hey, here's the machine you can go check out. And it gets you away also from that problem that exists where you find a bug and the developer says, okay, don't change the box until I can get over there, right? Because if it's a virtual machine and you can hydrate that state, then it's just a matter of being able to find the hard drive space to store those states, and then you can jump into that at any given time. Now, that's kind of the perfect vision there. I did mention that there's a lot of setup work that needs to happen. And for those of you that have invested in this, I hope you'll find it that it's valuable. I talk to customers every day that, you know, they kind of hate it early on, but once they get invested, boy, it sure does pay a lot of value. In fact, I was just talking to the Xbox Live team, and they use this for deploying all of their internal updates and all of their updates to the web services and the website. And so what they can do is they can say, make a change over here and push it out to the lab managed environment, run all their tests, and then quickly know whether or not they regressed any features. But here, this is kind of the infrastructure if you're setting up a 2010 lab management environment. I'm not going to take you through all this. I've done talks on it before. There's a lot of MSDN documentation. But suffice to say that there's a lot of things you have to set up. I mentioned System Center Virtual Machine Manager. You need to set up a team build controller. You need to pair all of your team build agents on those virtual machines with that controller. You need to set up a test controller, do the same thing, pair all those agents. You need to set up the lab agents to be able to talk to System Center Virtual Machine Manager. So it's a lot of work. And you do get those snapshot capabilities, which you don't get in the environments that I'm about to show you. But oftentimes, you know, that's a barrier for people to start benefiting from some of the capabilities lab management offers. Let me just do a quick time check. All right, we've got plenty of time, so I think we'll be able to get through everything I want to show you, which is great. So what I have here is Microsoft Test Manager 11. And what you can see here is that I've already set up my first environment. And so my first environment is another virtual machine that I'm connecting to. And I'm going to use that for purposes of this demonstration, but let me first show you what creating a new environment looks like so that when you go back home and you want to set this up for yourself, you'll have a better understanding of the process. And so in order to support that, what I have is another virtual machine that's running over here. And it's this guy here. And so this is just another virtual machine that's running on my same physical hardware. It could be a physical machine. It doesn't really matter. It could be Hyper-V. It could be VMware. It could be VirtualBox, any number of virtualization technologies. As long as I can connect to it from my network, then I'm good to go. And so what I want to do is say new. And up here at the top, you'll see I have the option of creating either a standard environment or an SCVMM environment. Remember, in this scenario, I don't have time to set up SCVMM. I don't have those resources. I just want a standard environment. And so what I'll do is I'll give this a name. Maybe I'm going to call this Windows Server 2008 R2 with SQL Express. So because I'm testing with SQL Server Development Edition, does my code run on SQL Express? I don't know. Let me make sure that I can test that somewhere else. And so at this point, I can just add any number of machines. So that virtual machine that I have running is at that IP address. And it's a web server. And I'll give it the name of an account that has administrative privileges. Once I remember what that is. Lab. I told you I'm on 90 minutes of sleep, right? Let me see here. ALM lab guest. Okay. I can set up additional tags if I want to. Most of the time, you don't need to worry about this. One of the ways that this can be helpful is, let's say you want to create a bunch of different virtual machine environments or physical machine environments that all have SQL Express on them, and you want to take advantage of resource balancing. So if you're spitting up a lot of builds during the day, you can say, you know, do a round robin distribution so that we can get through the build queue faster. For my example, I don't need to do that. So I'll just say next again. At this point, I get to decide how the agent on that machine gets to run. And in the previous 2010 example, we had three agents. Now we're just down to one. So there's a single agent now that's responsible for all that functionality. And so if I want to run coded UI tests on that machine, which is the ability for me to simulate a user at a mouse and keyboard clicking through the application or typing some stuff and looking and inspecting the values on those applications, then if I want to run that coded UI test, I have to run in what's called an interactive mode. And so I need to say which machine those are going to run on. If I had multiple environments or multiple machines within this environment, then I may have a client that I want to run those on, and so that allows you to differentiate against the server. I think I forgot it. ALM lab guest, is that right? Nobody's yelling at me, so I think that's good. And I think I fat fingered the password. Okay. So that all looks good. We'll verify. See if I got the password right. I did. Now here is the beauty of what we've done in lab management in this release. When I say finish, it's going to automatically configure that agent for me. If it's not already installed on the machine, it's going to push it down. If it's already installed on the machine, which I think it is on this particular virtual machine, then what it's going to do is just configure it to now talk to my particular environment and participate in my particular environment. So I apologize to all of you that have done this in Lab Management 2010. You're probably wishing you could have benefited from this. Believe me, I am too. But this is something that I'm really excited about. The other thing, too, is that even if you are using System Center Virtual Machine Manager and you're taking advantage of the full managed networks that allow you to do snapshotting and restoring, you can still benefit from the capability to automatically deploy this agent and maintain it straight from here, as opposed to having to drop into the box and install all those MSIs and configure them each manually. So that's really, really cool. So I'm going to let that go. We don't need that virtual machine because I already have another one that's part of my environment, and we'll use that from here on out. So I said that I want to set up a build-deploy-test environment because, again, I'm using call it Windows 8 as my development workstation, and I need to make sure that my code is going to work fine and all my tests are going to pass on Windows Server 2008. And so in order to do that, we need to create three parts of this equation: build, deploy, and test. I already have my environment now. So there's a couple of things I need to do from within Microsoft Test Manager. The first is to come over to Properties. Now on Properties, I can define what my test matrices is. So here you can see that currently I'm running all of my tests on Windows 8, which makes sense because that's the box that I have access to. But if I want to now run these tests on Windows Server as well, then I can just add Windows Server as an additional operating system that I'm interested in testing. Windows Server 2008. We'll save that. You can add any number of variables here for your test matrix. You know, maybe there's a certain version of a library that you need to test for on different machines. Maybe there's a different version of SQL Server or Oracle that you need to test against. You can add whatever you want. I'm just going to keep this simple for now. And so we'll create a new row in our test matrix. It says Windows Server 2008 R2. And we'll grab that operating system value I just created. And now we're good to go. So what did that do? Well, if I come back to my test plan, actually, one more thing. I need to tell this that we're participating in that. And now if I come back over to save and close my test plan, you see I have a single test case here. If I go to configurations, I can now say that this test needs to be run against multiple environments. And when I do that, then on the test tab, that individual test case now shows up twice. So for those of you that use MTM 2010, it's the same capability here. So this is just saying I could have one result where it's running fine on Windows 8, but I go over to Windows Server and I find a bug. So this allows me to track that differently. The other thing I need to do if I'm going to set up a build, deploy, test automated workflow is I need to say what I want to capture when I'm running those automated tests. So we've talked about video recordings and things like that. So what I need to do is come into test settings underneath the automated stage and say new. And we're going to say Windows Server 2008 BDT, which is just short for build, deploy, test workflow. I can say which roles I'm interested in for this particular test environment. Again, if I had multiple machines here, I could collect different sets of information off of the database versus the web client. And then here, this is the fun part. So this is where I get to say whether or not I want to capture code coverage. You know, I know that on Windows Server 2008, there's a lot of additional security lockdowns. So I'm going to grab the event log and specifically grab the security portion of the event log. We'll save that. You can do network emulation. So you can say make this environment think that it's on a 56K link. Maybe we're testing ATM machines or something that doesn't have a fast network connection. Test impact data, you know, a lot of this stuff you've probably seen before. Video recording. We've added audio, which is kind of interesting here. I don't know what would happen if you turned on audio recording for like a data center and you picked up some interesting conversations for somebody that happened to be walking by one of your test boxes. So have fun with that. The other thing that we found actually is that a lot of people use video recordings here, not just for tests that fail, but also for tests that pass. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, if you're in kind of a compliance environment and you need to make sure that you're documenting that the test team actually did run this test and actually went through everything like they were supposed to, this is a good way to kind of set up that audit trail for you. The other thing that we found back at Microsoft is that you know, we don't always generate documentation for every single change to an individual feature. But oftentimes people want to say, hey, how's that, you know, that particular feature working in the latest build of Visual Studio? Well, now what they can do is they can go back to the automated coded UI tests that were being run against Visual Studio, and they can say, show me a video recording for a test that passed. So it's really nice. It kind of becomes this ad hoc documentation, which is kind of nice. And so once you set up, you know, the types of information you want to collect here, there's a lot of other details you could configure here at a more granular level, but this is okay for our example. Then you can say which environment you want to use here by default. And I think that should be good to go. And so you see here that I have a test case. And those of you that maybe noticed, this is an automated test case. Well, how did I actually get that test case? Let's create a new one, and we'll create a new test case that might be a manual test. So we need to make sure that customers can create accounts with strong passwords, then log in. And most tests kind of start their lives as manual tests, as we mentioned earlier, and we may automate those over time. So we'll kind of simulate that here. So if we start this test as a manual test, and we say something like create or open the website, create new account with @user and @password. I'll show you what that does in a second. Log in with @user and @password. Make sure you are logged in. Expected result, page says success in bold. And then down here at the bottom, these are my test parameters. So, maybe the first thing I need to do, I can click into that box today. We'll just make sure that it works with one strong password. And we're good to go. So at this point, I've created a manual test. And I can use that environment that I created to run manual tests, no problem. But I want to do something a little bit more sophisticated. And that is, let's assume that manual test has been passing for several days now, and it's now time to automate that. Well, for those of you that are aware of coded UI tests are actually a great solution for that. I'm not going to take the time today to create a coded UI test. I actually did a couple of talks here last year about coded UI tests. They're all recorded on Channel 9. So if you're interested in getting really deep into specifics around coded UI tests, you can certainly go back and watch those presentations. But I am going to show you what you get once you've created a test, and you want to link that then back to the test case so that it becomes effectively an automated test case. And so to start with, I'm going to open up my solution here, which is checked into source control. And I actually don't have any coded UI tests in here, but that's fine because I have lots of unit tests to choose from. And so you can actually use any automated test to validate a particular test case, whether that's a unit test or a coded UI test, a web performance test, or even a generic test where you're maybe calling something from the command line and making sure you get back what you expect. And so what I can do is go check out my work items. And I'll just find that test case. And there's my new test case. Now, it's important what I've done here is I've dropped over to Visual Studio. A lot of people try to do this in Microsoft Test Manager, and they realize they can't add an automated test from over in Microsoft Test Manager. That's because you have to have your solution open and bound to Team Foundation Server in order for us to make that work. And so when I open up this test case again, you see there's my manual test down below. And there's this test automation tab or associated automation tab. And what I can do is I can just point at a list of automated tests that are checked in as part of this solution. And this one looks close enough. Again, it could be a coded UI test. It's probably a little bit more interesting. And what we'll do is we'll just save that. And now when I go back to my test plan and I take a look at this test, you'll see that all four of these tests, actually both of these tests are automated, and we have a test configuration that says we need to run it against two different platforms. Okay? So now we've set up the test part, we've set up the environment, now let's set up the whole end-to-end workflow using a build process here. So we're using Team Build that's built into Team Foundation Server, included for free as part of Team Foundation Server. One of the things that you'll notice down here is I've already created a build definition to actually just compile my solution. And one of the things I'll do is go ahead and queue a new build so that we can compile the latest build in the background while I show you the next step. One of the things I'm going to do is just turn off the unit tests that run as part of this build, because I don't want to run anything as part of this build on the build server. Instead, for this particular test, I need to run everything in my environment. So this will make more sense in a minute. So I just queued off that build. Now the next thing I need to do is create a new build definition that defines the build deploy test workflow. And so we'll call this Windows Server 2008 build deploy test. I can define my trigger, so I could have this run twice a day or, you know, every Friday night if I wanted to. We'll keep it manual for now. Workspace, we can keep all these things default. This is just my drop location. Now process, this is where the magic happens. So what I want to do is actually change the process template that's being used over to the lab management template. And the lab management template actually wraps a lot of the complicated stuff behind the scenes within a wizard. So here you can see the lab process settings. What I can do is just click on the ellipsis, and this is going to launch a wizard that takes me through configuring that build, deploy, test environment. And so we'll say next. We say which environment we're interested in. In this case, you know, I want to use my, I zoomed in. Never tried zooming in on that screen, but don't zoom in on that screen. Take it from me. Okay, I think this will still work. We'll try it. Now, notice here that that I have the option in a full System Center Virtual Machine Manager environment of rolling back to some clean location before I start my build deploy test workflow. One of the trade-offs, of course, I've mentioned this a couple times, is that when you go to a standard environment, one of these unmanaged environments, we don't have the ability to roll that back. From our perspective, it could be a physical machine or it could be running on another third-party virtualization platform that we don't understand. Now, if you're running on VMware, if you're running on VirtualBox, if you're running on any of these other kind of modern virtualization environments, it's fairly straightforward for you to go script the additional workflow steps that you need in order to, say, restore this to some known snapshot, and in the end, take a snapshot once you're done. We're not doing that in the product, but I expect shortly after we ship that there will be a number of community efforts underway that say, here's the code you need to copy and paste into place, and your workflow will then just be off and running and working with VMware and getting that full automation support. But it does require a little bit more work than you would with a traditional Hyper-V and SCVMM environment where it's all baked in. So just want to make that clear. Next up, we get to decide which build we want to actually use. So this is the solution, my projects, all that good stuff. I can queue a new build if I want to, or I can just use the last known good build. So I actually just created a new build, so we'll just use that one. Next up, we can deploy the build. Now, I'm not going to do anything fancy here just for purposes of our demo. So what I'm going to do is just say, you know, call a command line parameter, something like, you know, directory. So this is not deploying the build. Obviously, there's, you know, any number of ways you could do this, whether it's an Xcopy deployment or a web deploy or a SQL script. If I had multiple machines within my environment, I could actually define, here's what you do on the web server, here's what you do on the database server. We even let you use some parameters in here like machine names, build location. So this is a pretty powerful system. Each one of those steps is going to run sequentially, but there's no secret sauce here. However you deploy your build today, you just come in here and tell us how you need that to execute. And then finally, I get to say whether or not I want to run tests, and of course I do. And it's going to be running tests for this particular Windows Server 2008 configuration, so you need to make sure that you select that so that your test results get filed appropriately. And we'll go ahead and finish and save that build. And so now that's another build. I could create one for Windows 7, another one for Windows Server 2003. I could have a whole list of different builds that target different environments if I want to. At this point, I'll just go ahead and queue a new build. And this is going to kick off that process. So now this build is queued. Actually, while we're waiting on that, I love this new feature that we added to the TFS Web Access. You can actually see all of your builds straight from Web Access now, and you can even queue a build straight from Web Access. So I could come in here and say, you know, what's my build queue? I've got this build deploy test workflow that's running. So it's in the middle. I can see everything that it's doing. In fact, there's my directory command, so you know that's in place of whatever your actual build deployment output would be. Let me go back to Visual Studio and we'll see how this is doing in here. So still moving along. This is really nice because, you know, if there was something that went wrong when I was trying to deploy a build, maybe I didn't have permissions to IIS or something like that, all of that information that you put into the deployment page is just going to be output here, just as if you were sitting in front of the machine. This looks like it's almost done. It's just running those tests from my particular test plan, and now we're done. And so here you can see this is my build summary. It took me 74 seconds to go out and push everything off to that other machine. Obviously, I'm not doing anything fancy here, but this is something that could have run in the background while I was off coding or doing something else. And you can see that everything at first blush looks like it passed. I see that I have some test results down here from those tests that just ran. So if I say view test results, it's going to open those up in a detailed view so I can see here are the individual tests that I ran. Let's take a look at this particular test I just created. You can see that this test ran and it passed. You can see the attachments. You can see here I've got my video file that was captured. If I had IntelliTrace information, I could go back and look at that screen capture to say, okay, I know that it ran this coded UI test. My coded UI test thinks it passed, but maybe I just need to go take a peek at it because sometimes there's, you know, something else that maybe went wrong that my UI test wasn't looking for. So you can do that. The other thing that you can do is file a bug straight from here. So if one of these tests failed, I could say turn this test result into a bug. I could also do that automatically if I wanted to as part of my build deploy test workflow. So you have the preference. If you want to have maybe testers come in and look at the test results and kind of determine whether or not it's really a bug before you send it over to a developer, you have that option. Or if you want to automatically push bugs into TFS, you have that option as well. The other thing you could do is you could say, well, you know, I see why this test failed. It's because this database server that it needs wasn't online. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go push that other database server online, and then let me just go rerun this specific test. And so I could select that test and just click this icon here that says rerun that test. Or the other thing you could do is you could come drop back to your test tab. And notice here we have test results now. So you have, you know, this test result passed for these tests running on Windows Server 2008, but we don't know what's going to happen on Windows 8 because I haven't tested it on this machine yet. But if I wanted to take this particular test and maybe run it manually, I can say run with options, and I can say run all tests manually, and it would give me that option of doing so. And you could then connect to that environment using basically a remote desktop client and then run all your tests and see exactly what's happening for yourself. So again, it gives you a lot of really nice options. It gives you those environments that you can use for your automated tests, for your manual tests. I think this is one of my favorite features that we've done in Visual Studio 11 because I've always been a huge fan of what we've delivered around the lab management capabilities, but I know that it's not always approachable to everybody. So I hope you'll give us kind of a second chance around lab management and take some of that spare hardware or, you know, spin up a couple of virtual machines and see how you can get this working for you. And actually, you can see here, here's my other machine, which just spun up in the background. So had we been watching that, it would have actually installed the agent, configured the agent, rebooted the machine, and then logged back on as an interactive process. So again, really nice, automates a lot of that work so you don't have to worry about it. Okay, So finally, I just want to reemphasize some of the value that you get out of Team Foundation Server and the fact that you have all these artifacts that are linked together behind the scenes. This is a gentleman that I refer to as the grandfather of Team Foundation Server. Obviously, he was dead long before TFS came out, but I think if he was alive today, Lord Kelvin certainly would have invented Team Foundation Server, because this is the guy that was responsible for measuring and coming up with the Kelvin scale, and he's oftentimes quoted that saying as saying that you can't manage something you don't actually can't measure, so you don't understand. And I think that's a really important point. I mean, if we think about software development and all the complexities that go on during the course of a project, you know, how do you know whether or not you're on track to deliver a high quality product at the end of a release cycle? You know, can you answer all those questions to your management chain when they say, you know, how's our test plan progressing? How's last week's build looking? Are our customers happy? And so that's really the beauty for me behind Team Foundation Server, is being able to link all these artifacts and start to answer those types of questions. So these are just a few of my favorite reports in Team Foundation Server. This is one that I call the Steven Sinofsky Report. The reason I call it the Steven Sinofsky Report is that Office 14 and Windows 7 were built with an early version of the hierarchical work item support that we had within Team Foundation Server 2010. And so they project managed the entire solution using TFS. And so what they could do is they could start looking across their favorite features. So if I'm Steven Sinofsky and I say, you know, how's the latest, I don't know, what's a feature in Windows 7? I don't even remember. What's with Windows 8? Metro style UI. How's that, you know, new little gadget capability that's coming into the product? Then I can say, all right, well, I can see that that particular feature is about 80% coded. The implementation is about 80% done. But how's my test plan coming? And I can see here that, you know, maybe I don't have any tests that have actually been written. So that's a warning sign that I can call up my testers and say, you know, why don't we have any tests written for that particular requirement. And so this starts to give you that end-to-end traceability from the feature all the way down to those individual tests. Just a couple more in here. This is one of the dashboards you can set up with Team Foundation Server out of the box. And what you can see here is that we have bugs that are continuing to pile up in the system. And so we started off down here with bugs that were kind of, you know, a small section of resolved bugs. And by the time we get towards the end of the release, we actually have a lot of bugs that are stuck in the resolve state. Well, for this particular process, we know that anything that comes from an active bug into resolved is the developer saying, hey, I fixed that. But we risk getting to the end of the iteration without actually validating that that fix took place from the testing team. And so this could mean that we need to get some more testers to come in here and make sure that we move these over to green or reactivate them and make sure that maybe, you know, maybe it was working on the developer's machine, but we have all these other issues that are taking place when you push that over to a Windows Server environment or something like that. What's another one? So this just shows you your code churn. Hopefully that's going down by the end of the iteration. You know, a lot of this stuff you guys already know. This one's really interesting, because you can see here that we have a burn down chart, and the burn down chart says that we're actually on track to finish our work by the end of the milestone. And so if you're just using a burn down chart to say whether or not your project's on track, then you would think that this is a pretty healthy looking project. But because we have that multi-dimensional view across Team Foundation Server, we actually see down here that, hey, you know, we're not actually closing out any user stories. So what that means is our developers are maybe doing a little bit of work over here and a little bit of work over here and a little bit of work over here, but they're not actually focusing on an end-to-end user story that our test team can test and validate that it's going to deliver what the customer is expecting. And so again, this could be a really nice opportunity for us to course correct in real time before we get to the end of the iteration and realize we just finished a bunch of work, but we don't have time to test it. And, you know, just some more stuff in here. All of our team web access is available as web parts now, so you can take a lot of this stuff and create custom dashboards for your CIO and give everybody that has a need to know a direct insight into the project. So thank you for bearing with me on my first version of this presentation. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you'll send me feedback. We have just a couple minutes if anybody has any questions, comments. Yes. Is the next beta of TFS coming with a go live license? I don't think I'm allowed to say, but I can say that I would be pretty excited about it. So I don't know. I hope I don't get in trouble for that. But yes. So what he's asking about is the go live license. In the past, we have reached certain milestones in the product that we say, you know, we feel really good about customers actually using this, even though it's a beta, using it in production, and we'll support you. It won't be, you know, the full like 24/7 uptime support, but it'll be like the 9-to-5 support, and we'll do our best effort to help you have a good time with the product. Sometimes there may be workarounds required during that beta time frame, the fact that you're asking means that you're probably an early adopter, and I would say that yes, you certainly should be looking forward to a go live release coming from Microsoft sometime in the future. That's about all I want to say around that. So thanks for the question. Anything else? Okay, well, thanks for having me back here in Belgium. I hope to see you again next year. Thanks for coming.